the first documented instance of a pest survival on BT corn in the field. There should be an overall low risk to Cryo-1F corn in the continental United States, first of all, because fall armyworm is a secondary pest, and also because of the population dynamics and overwintering biology of the pest. It's only capable of overwintering in the extreme southern part of the U.S., the very southern part of Florida and the very southern part of Texas, so it's unlikely that it would be able to establish a foothold in the U.S. Nonetheless, this is certainly a significant finding in our resistance monitoring program. I want to turn to the cotton side. There have been, of course, three toxins that are registered for with BT cotton targeting Lepidoptera. These are Cry1AC. It's been registered since 1996. Cry2AB2, which has been registered since 2003, and Cry1F, which has been registered since 2005. And there are two major production zones for cotton in the southeastern U.S. The target pests are tobacco budworm and cotton bollworm. And in the southwestern U.S., the target pest is pink bollworm. And all three of these insects are part of the annual resistance monitoring for BT cotton. So this next slide I've included as an example of how sampling sites are selected for cotton. In this case, this is for tobacco budworm, and the sites have been targeted based on adoption of BT cotton. I think these are overall cotton acreages here, and also areas where, based on our natural refuge assessment, where natural refuge might be a little bit lower. We're going to have to really speed through this now. Okay, just to go over the results really quickly, the bottom line and the good news for cotton is there's been no documented cases of field resistance to date. There was one collection of pink bollworm in 1997 that did survive a diagnostic concentration. Resistance allele frequency was estimated to be 0.16. That's fairly high. However, we have not seen reduced Cry1AC susceptibility or field effects since this collection, and subsequent estimates of the resistance allele frequency have been much lower, 0.004. I think I'm going to skip over the cotton bollworm part here because Dr. Luttrell will be giving a talk a little later in the symposium where he will be going over his data, and I think he can probably do a better job discussing his data than me, so I'll skip that part. Just to go over some of the challenges that we've been facing with resistance monitoring, some of the pests are a little harder to monitor than others, as we've seen with fall armyworm in Puerto Rico. Some of the secondary pests can present a challenge. So we have to ask the question, how do we monitor secondary pests and what happens if we do find resistance? Cotton bollworm has been a challenge because it's less susceptible to BT toxins, and it's been very difficult to develop a diagnostic concentration for the pest. Corn rootworm, again, this is one that's a really tough one to rear in the lab, and diet bioassays would certainly be a tough thing for this. So alternate approaches to monitoring may be needed for both of these pests. Other challenges are more logistical, resource challenges, both financial and time. Academic cooperators certainly can be challenged by the amount of time that they need to devote to doing monitoring. Methodology has presented a challenge in having consistent procedures and getting consistent output. Having available toxins to test and monitoring has been an issue. As well as the sampling methodology, which, as I mentioned before, is focused on areas of highest adoption. But there's always the possibility of missing something if you have either recessive resistance or very low resistance allele frequencies. So where do we go from here? Certainly we can improve our sampling, focusing on areas that present the greatest suction pressure resistance risk. We need to be able to follow up on populations that may show elevated tolerance to BT toxins, either on diagnostic concentrations or other measures. We can look at developing improved monitoring techniques with greater sensitivity. Pyramided crops are certainly been, seems to be the direction BT crops are going, and with multiple toxins, that's something we need to be able to address, and other cropping systems that may be out there. And with that, I will finish up. And sorry for running over. Do we have time for questions? Or?
Well, we're...
Maybe one.
At the outset, I'd like to thank Charlene and Alan for helping me rearrange the schedule so that I might be able to talk right now and make my airline appointment. And also a thanks to Graham Head. I won't repeat the title, but jump right into the talk. I'd like to have you think of three questions that, and my talk is organized along three questions. First of all, the why we've engaged in this approach. Secondly, what we've accomplished and what has been seen in the field. And then finally, where are we going? So we start out in the why, looking specifically at stewardship, crop stewardship, and recognizing, as Alan has already said, that PIP crop monitoring is required as part of registration. We see that monitoring should increase or should be more important to us as the acreage of BT corn increases, and there is distinctly the possibility, and we have some reference to Alan's talk about the development of pest resistance to the corn hybrids with the GM trait. Our approach in looking at the current monitoring strategy, we have several concerns. We see that infestations are essentially a local phenomenon. We see also that the current strategy is limited to four sections that are really used as a proxy for the entire crop, and we're left with the question whether those samplings are indeed adequate. So we're starting to engage the what, and the what comes out of this scenario, that is, we know that corn plantings are very large, and how do we actually get to the details of the plantings, that is, that large acreage? And so with that approach, it came to our mind, after some degree of analysis, that remote sensing could possibly play that role. As we look at remote sensing, we have essentially two questions that would serve to be important to us. Can we distinguish the transgenic hybrids from isolines or other non-transgenic trait varieties? And can we actually see pest infestation using this imagery as well? We use this approach with this cartoon here. As you can see in the upper right hand, we've used a leaf showing you going from a healthy leaf to a dead leaf, that the reflected light signatures change as a function of the leaf conditions. Also, if you look to the left, the interaction of light with the leaf occurs at the surface, and as you go to longer wavelengths, you actually have interactions with organelles in the leaf interstices. And how we see it potentially apply to a corn monitoring, we see in the lower right, going from soil to the mature plant, that signature is expected to change. What we're looking at in this slide is nothing more than the invasion of European corn borer to the corn stalk, and in doing so, it's disrupting essentially the ways in which water and other nutrients are actually reaching the far reaches of the plant beyond this point of invasion, and it's expected that that would have a deleterious effect on the vegetation. What we've used essentially is a hyperspectral camera. Hyperspectral camera is best understood as being a camera with high degrees of spectral resolution and also spatial resolution. As you'll see in 2004, we have a spectral resolution between 473 to 827. We had 120 bands there, and you can sort of do the arithmetic as to the number of nanometers per band. We also looked at half meter resolution, and we are taking the light, as you look at the bottom part of the slide, through a filter, and then onto a prism. The prism then pushes the light onto a CCD array, and it's recorded in that manner. This instrument is situated in a Cessna 210 in the seat where the co-pilot would normally sit. And it's operated with a breadbox type camera or a breadbox type computer, so we actuate the data taking with a second person. This is the way the flight line looks. It's this imagery looks at about a mile in width. It's about 5 miles long. We're looking in this image at 1 meter pixels, and so we have roughly 1,600 pixels across, 120 bands, now in the range of 400 to 1,000 nanometers. And so it takes about 20 minutes to fly this, and we have about 4 hours to actually take the data. Just quickly going through image analysis, once we've rectified and properly assigned the image, we do unsupervised classifiers. We found a lot of value in using ratios and indices, and we have also done supervised classifiers as well as signal analysis. Our early experimental design, and this goes from 2004, was essentially a complete random box design, which was replicated 5 times, located in 3 different positions, that is Pennsylvania, Nebraska, and Iowa. And we had buffer zones between the plots. We had inoculations in specific parts of this replicated design with European corn borer, both for first infestation, which occurred at V8 through V10 growth stages, and then we had a second infestation, which occurred later in the season. We assessed the damage by the Guthrie rating, and we imaged the plots on a 2-week schedule. 7 imaging events occurred during the 2004 season. Some of you have already seen this. This is just to show you that when we did 2004 side by side, we wanted to make sure that we were comparing apples with apples, and we recognized that there was a different maturation rate between the two seasons during the growth cycle. So we had to match those up based, and we did so using growing degree days. What I want to do now is to jump into the analysis, and this just gives you a flavor of the data that we collected. This is 2004 data. Please note that we have something in the cyan to blue region, 500 to 550 roughly, where we see separation of the different varieties, as well as we see in the red to near infrared region. We also have established at the same time a difference in percent reflectance for the transgenic variety and its isoline, and you can see behavioral differences for the different isolines across the spectral range. So I'm going to flip through August 9th and September 3rd. Just see in September 3rd how quickly it has changed. Obviously, we are looking at differences based largely upon maturation and perhaps even entering into senescence. We did a neural network analysis of this data set in 2004. What we set this up as is doing a discriminant analysis to identify the sensitive wavelengths that we could use, and they're listed there for your inspection. When we threw these together plus a neural network and ask ourselves what ability do we have to distinguish the GMO varieties from non-GMO varieties, we came up with roughly an 80% accuracy. Now let's go comparing years September 3, 04 and September 10th, 04. The layouts are, the planned layouts are to your top, and what we're showing in the predicted plots is essentially our ability to put the pixels into the proper boxes in which those pixels should go if they are isoline versus transgenic. I also want to point out to you that we have a training set which really uses about 50% of the pixels, and we have a learning set or testing set which is the other 50%. So you can see the accuracies of isoline versus transgenic ability, both producer and user accuracy. When we move to The N60B6 transgenic versus isolines, we have a reasonably high producer accuracy for the N60B6, and also the non-BT falls a bit. Overall, we have an 81%. We can actually, based upon how we choose to develop producer accuracy, change the user's accuracies to our intents in the, as we want to monitor. Here's just the example of the DK5878 variety, and as you can see, our ability to distinguish this one variety is not as good as we've seen in the past. Then we want to jump quickly into how our ability to see ECB infestation, European corn borer infestation. This is in our very early side, 2004. Our data points are on the graph above. We actually see at the beginning of August into August major changes in the F value, which are indicating our ability to start seeing infestation. And we use threshold classification for this, and we can actually see infested areas at about 91% and uninfested areas at about an accuracy of 94%. Going into second generation European corn borer, 2004-2005 in Nebraska, we can see the actual plot, the layout is in the middle, and we can see the predicted, again, using our ability to put the pixels into the proper boxes or plots. And this image to the far left is a red near-infrared composite. This is a very interesting slide of Rick Helmick's plantings in 2006. And Rick had established infestation areas within his plantings and had not told us. So we went out to him with the imagery, not knowing that things had occurred or the layout was as it was. He took one look at it and he says, "You found all my secrets." So we clearly can identify infestation effects in Iowa in that one slide. Let me jump then into how we're doing work with essentially gaining access at ground truthing. We're using handheld computers with a global positioning system. We use shape files, and the shape files for our people going out into the field can easily identify by means of the GPS system the location, and we have some examples of conditions that we've seen in the field specifically related to that shapefile. Let me go then into another condition where we found this in September of 06. Data that which is the central feature there. We see problems with this based upon what the grower told us was there. We see that basically his map has to be a problem. Going to the map, going to the grower, he said, "Yes, I forgot to tell you that I had planted otherwise," and gave us the map to the far left, or far right, I'm sorry. Here's another condition where we actually have two DeKalb varieties separated by 3 days of maturity using split planters, and we can actually see the two of them apart from one another, and this is done in Illinois. We're looking at August 2007 imagery. We have two portions that we've actually amplified in magnification, and we have slightly colored areas that may not be visible or all that visible to you in the back, but what we are finding is in this case that we are finding insects and damage in the field for a European corn borer transgenic variety. We're not telling you what it is because there's some sensitivity to that information. We also have a split planter, two separate corn rootworm control hybrids in this plot, and we actually see problems with pest infestation there. Here's another example. These are taken, this previous slide and this slide are from Illinois. We have a August 26th, 07 time frame. We're using a ratio composite, which is 674 and I think 737. This ratio starts to point out areas of concern based upon the different modelings. We have in this put together the red near infrared composite. The green areas, as you can see, are that are depicted are portrayed by this photograph, whereas this area right here, virtually the same, we're starting to see frass development in the corn crop itself. This is an example of our ability to send people out into the field and look for problems. We've identified areas of concern in the imagery to the top, and the points that, whoops, this doesn't seem to be very stable, but as you can see here, these points sort of identified in white across the map, those are areas of concern that we sent our scouts out to, and these are the conditions that we actually encountered in the field. So we're having our ability to see problems and have inspections done concomitantly with that. Our 2008 research directions are developing along this line. We are looking at a what we call a RAP system, a rapid acquisition and processing system. We're looking at developing this, having four cameras that are multispectral, but with specific wavelength filters, and we believe that this system could easily be an easy way to diagnose the corn crop for infestation, also give us some idea of transgenic versus non-transgenic. The image analysis is expected to occur rather rapidly. It will not occur on board, so it will be downloaded and done subsequently, but it will be done rather rapidly. And then the locations that we identify by the image analysis will be exported to the GPS system and then identified for the on-ground scouting crew. Thank you very much for your attention.
We have time for a couple of questions. As a reminder, I set the timer at 17 minutes, and when John showed me the number of slides yesterday, I was really doubting that he could do it, but I'm very impressed. So if you have any questions, please ask them, and I'm going to get things ready if there aren't any, but feel free.